I didn't say anything.
You said I heard yip.
Is that like those? Are we doing those ones that were on the Muppets?
Yeah, before Groot.
That's what I was thinking of.
There was the yip aliens.
Yep.
I hope somebody was recording that.
If that doesn't make people tune out, nothing will. Because that'll be our opener.
Oh, the only show on the network hosted by a bunch of Muppets.
Angela!
Okay. I think I'm Dr. Peeker.
Deep Space One! Deep Space Two! Babylon 5! Deep Space Nine! Space 1999! Saturn 3! Blade Runner 2049!
Fahrenheit 451!
Are we quite through?
Yes, we're through. We're done.
We should have had it all Muppet or Puppet episode of Deep Space Nine. They all got.
No, they did that in episodes of Angel.
I know, yeah. Well, that wasn't all of them, but yeah, he got turned into a puppet. Oh, look, you're a wee puppet man!
Yeah.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
Here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, the Deep Space Nine review program. I'm joined by Sir Andrew Leyland.
Greetings.
And Dr. Bill Robinson.
I will be attending the wedding this weekend. I've been invited. Philip! Invite Andrew!
Oh, is he? Oh, I can't remember everything. Well, you're going to have to leave.
they make him be the bouncer. He's going to come over to you and tell you to go.
They're all going to be like Stan and Jack at the wedding of Reed and Sue. They're just going to turn us away.
Is he going to be watching the buffet table?
Oh, does this buffet cost a lot of money, Lizzie? I'm not letting the riffraff near the ship. They can go and eat the chips with the lackeys. The shrimp is for me.
Stop feeding those to the corgis.
Philip, that's expensive scampi. Don't give it to the corgis. It makes them shit.
Make the corgis go.
No. Oh, that was a lovely impression of the corgis pooing.
Excuse me.
While I whip this out.
Why are you?
I am Pa Bill.
We didn't invite that Bill Robinson, did we, Philip?
No. We've not invited anyone from the colonies.
Philip, you do know he's marrying someone from the colonies, right?
What?
I don't want to interrupt.
But we must, for we have Deep Space Nine to talk about.
Yeah, today we're here to talk about The Assignment, which is the third episode of Season 5. And we'll get to that momentarily. But before we do that, William, do you have anything to discuss? I think you do.
Oh, yeah. Just going to do a quick... since we don't really have any news, I was able to finish listening to the audiobook for Drastic Measures for Star Trek Discovery, which it was a little slow in the start, because I think we had said before that, you know, it's basically covering the ground on an event that has been mentioned before. It was actually resolved somewhat in the original series, and that was what took place on Tarsus 4 with the whole Kodos the Executioner and thing. But this kind of filled in a lot of the backstory, and at first I was like, well, you know, why are we what's the point in this, why are we going over this? But it was I have to say it did fill in some gaps. It was interesting. It kind of gave you a little bit more of the mindset of Gabriel Lorca. And I do believe it is our Lorca. Spoilers if you haven't seen Star Trek Discovery yet. You know, this is the Lorca of our universe. And I would, you know, if you can get through, if you're listening to it, if you can get through about the first maybe hour and a half, it'll pick up. It kind of filled in the gap of how Kodos got away. Because at one point I'm thinking, how's he gonna, you know? It's not necessarily, you know, even though you know the end of the story, it was actually interesting to listen to. So I would give it two thumbs up, or a thumb down.
You're giving it both of your thumbs.
Yeah, two thumbs. And I don't know if I should give away. There was almost an after credit scene in the book.
All right. Now, how do you do that?
Well, okay. The other audiobook that I listened to, once they started to play the, you know, Star Trek Discovery, Drastic Measures, was read by, written by, blah, 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 and I was like, on the previous one, for Desperate Hours, I just, you know, I was like, yeah. I shut it off. Well, I was driving, so I couldn't really reach over it and shut it off, so I just let it play out to the end, and then it got through all the
credits. Hold on, wait. Whoa. You were driving, so you couldn't shut it off?
Yeah, the phone.
Oh, okay. I thought you had it on in your car stereo. It's like you reach over, you push the button.
Well, yeah, but traffic was like... Well, I wouldn't just turn my stereo off because I was going to stop playing on the phone. Yeah. So I was driving and I couldn't reach the phone. And, you know...
Nor should you.
Well, correct. That's, yeah, because I'm driving my work van and, you know, I'm not supposed to be using the phone. I had set it up before I started my little journey, plugged it in, set it on the seat, and then was just driving. So it gets through the credits, and then the guy that's been reading the book, he comes back on and says, "Elsewhere." And I'm like, "Huh?" And then they, you're back to Lorca, and it's our Lorca, but he's in the Mirror Universe. He's being held captive. I'm like, what? Well, I mean, he's voicing it as Lorca. He's not saying complete... Well, yes. He doesn't say he's Lorca, but he does an action at the end that makes you know this is Lorca, and he's trapped in the Mirror Universe now. And he's being held prisoner. So, I don't know if that's going to be in another book, if that's like a teaser. I was surprised to find that there. And I'd never had, like, it was an after credit scene in an audiobook. Like, I don't know if it was actually in the book itself. I'm assuming it was, maybe as like an epilogue. But they didn't say. I mean, it was totally after the credits for the audiobook, which was interesting. So now, at the end of this one, I'm going to have to, or the one I'm listening to now, I'm listening to another book, which I'll get into in a second. So I would recommend it. I would go out and seek it out if you do audiobooks. The guy that reads it, he did a good job of differentiating the voices, including female, which is not always an easy thing to do.
No, you end up sounding like a caricature of Queenie.
Right.
You sound like Terry Jones.
Yes, exactly.
Or Andy doing the Queen.
The Queen. I think it was Robert Petkoff is the gentleman that does the audio for it. Let me back up a second.
I'm not familiar with him.
Read by... I'm sure he's a regular,
audiobook guy.
Yeah, because actually I've got like five more audiobooks for Star Trek because I had a bunch of Audible credits because we signed up for Audible because Ben had to get a book for school. And we've got to cancel it, so I built up all these credits. So we canceled it, and I went and bought all these Star Trek books. And out of the like six I bought, he's reading five of them. So I guess I'm going to get used to him. So, yeah. Drastic Measures, Discovery, good book. Next book I'm reading that I just started is called, and it's a special 50th anniversary trilogy, Star Trek Legacies, and book one, and that's Captain to Captain, written by Greg Cox. I should say the other book that I just did a review on is written by Dayton Ward. But Greg Cox is doing this one, and this one centers around the character of Una, number one, from The Cage.
Mm.
Well, at least the first book does. And the premise behind it is that there is a... I'll just read the back of the book. Hidden aboard the USS Enterprise is a secret that has been passed from captain to captain, from Robert April to Christopher Pike to James T. Kirk. Now the return of the enigmatic woman, once known as Number One, has brought that secret to light, and Kirk and his crew must risk everything to finish a mission that began with Captain April so many years ago. Nearly two decades earlier, April and his crew first visited the planet Usilda, where they found both tragedy and a thorny moral dilemma. Today, the legacy of that fateful occasion will compel Kirk to embark on a risky voyage back to that forbidden world, which is now deep in territory claimed by the Klingon Empire.
Against you've now committed a wanton act of war.
Oh, sorry. It's doing the red alert thing. So...
Turn off that siren!
So, basically... I'm not going to spoil anything, so... Una comes to the Enterprise.
Una Paloma Blanca.
Oh, you find out the origin of why she's called Number One, and it's not because she was a first officer.
Number
it's
one.
Because she likes going to the toilet.
Really? We got to go there?
Yes, we do.
In the
it's
middle
better
of
than,
my
it's
book
better
review.
Than it's better than if she was Number Two.
Number Two.
Please wipe Number Two.
Number Two. Be kind. Wipe, please. No. Anyway, she got that nickname because of how well
it's a nickname?
She... Yes, it's a nickname. Given to her at the academy because she was top of her class, she excelled at everything. She actually skipped a year at the academy because she was so darn smart. So that's why she's called Number One.
Isn't that explaining something that didn't need explaining?
That's what it sounds like to me.
Little bit.
Why
especially since Riker is Number One.
Yeah.
Was he first in his class also?
He's first in straddling chairs. Number One chair
and
straddler.
And young ensigns who've just transferred onto the ship.
But she comes aboard on the auspices that she's visiting. This takes place not too soon after. It's in the 5-year mission. After Spock had taken Pike to Talos IV and, dropped him off with Vina.
Beep, beep, beep.
Hey, Vina.
So she says that she wanted to find out from Spock, is Pike all right, blah, blah, blah. But then she breaks into Kirk's quarters, knocks out O'Reilly. You remember? Kevin O'Reilly. Or is it Riley?
Maybe he could sing us Take Me Home, Irene.
One more time.
Oh, God, no, not again.
Shut that off. Don't you think I'm trying? Okay, Aurora, back off, woman.
You have one job.
You can't turn off the communications.
We don't have a volume control on this thing?
Yeah. Just smash the damn speaker. So she breaks into his quarters and steals an object and then hightails it back to her ship and basically it just splits and the Enterprise...
This is Vina that's doing this?
No, Una. Una.
Oh.
Una
number
Columbia
one. Blanca.
Yeah. So, yeah. You're like, what? And then from there, there's a chase and she gets away from him and then they go into like flashback time and you're taken back to the Robert April mission back when he was a captain and she was like a young lieutenant. Oh, she's also now, at this point in time, she is the captain of the Yorktown. But the Yorktown was being refitted, and she was on leave at Memory Alpha. That's why she took a little side journey. You know, don't know why she's doing what she's doing yet, because that's the story you're getting in this book, and I don't want to really spoil anything. At one point, I thought I knew what was going on, but now I'm not sure, so I gotta wait and see. That's all I'm gonna say about that. It's been pretty good so far. I'm about 6 hours into the book. Got about 3 hours left. So, and then obviously there's two more books after this. I said at the beginning that it was a trilogy. So, we'll see where it goes. I'll fill you in as I finish the books.
On a future episode.
Yes.
So as you listen to this, you'll find out who number one works for.
Who does number one work for?
Not for number six.
So we have number one,
yeah.
And we have Una.
Oh, yeah, good point. She's called Una because, well, maybe, I think that, I think that was part of, like the joke, too.
It dawns on me that Patrick McGoohan could have saved an awful lot of time if he'd just been in Star Trek.
I don't think Paul gets that.
Who is number one?
The prisoner. I get it.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm not stupid like you. I mean, I'm not stupid.
You are number
six. No, you're stupid in different ways.
Yeah, exactly.
I've invented whole new ways of stupid.
I'm so stupid it'll totally confuse you.
Anyway, do you get the impression we're avoiding talking about this episode?
No! I like this episode.
Well, that's the most animated you have ever been.
But we have this reputation of not liking episodes. I think we like almost all of them. And I, Bill, being a little bit of a curmudgeon this week, was messaging to Andy and I that he was not a fan of this particular episode. And Andy, in response, kind of just said, all right, I liked a couple of things. And I hadn't rewatched it yet. And then I sat down and watched it, and I thought, I really liked this. I thought this was good. I really have very little to complain about in this episode. So we kind of go the spectrum on it. We go from don't like to think it's okay to like, liking fairly a lot.
Yep.
And we will get into that aspect of it after the plot. But this episode is The Assignment, which is the third episode, or fourth. Excuse me, is it the third episode of season three, I believe? Season five, I believe?
Fifth, isn't it?
It's episode 5, season 5, episode 5.
I think the confusion there is coming from this was switched around in production again.
Deep Space Nine
30th anniversary special September sweeps episode, is that right? Sweeps episode, something like that.
I'm confusing myself all around because it's listed as season 5, episode 5, but it's also listed as production code 504.
Yeah,
which would mean it was the fourth produced episode. And it's also the 103rd episode of the series. Seeing all of those things are just confusing me, and that's why I said third. But it's the fifth episode of season five, and it's focusing, you know, this time around, we have a whole new way to torture Miles O'Brien.
Taken over by an alien entity.
If you don't do precisely what I ask, I'll kill your wife.
O'Brien's wife becomes a pawn in a deadly game.
We don't want to raise suspicions, do we?
To save her.
I want my wife back to you.
How far will he go?
We have a saboteur on the station.
How much will he sacrifice?
I make the rules.
Who must he betray?
God help me.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
While on Bajor doing botanical research in the Bajoran fire caves, Keiko O'Brien is possessed by a Par Wraith with a plan to eliminate the Prophets. The Par Wraith forces Miles O'Brien to modify DS9 systems in order to be able to fire chroniton radiation at the wormhole, destroying both it and the Prophets, or else he loses his wife and daughter Molly. Being under an impossible time limit, O'Brien tricks Rom into assisting him with the modifications. He explains to him that this is a top-secret upgrade, and that he is to tell no one what he is doing and why Dax spots the modifications, and thinking there's a saboteur loose, alerts the operations staff. Poorly written, but what can I tell you? O'Brien is forced to point Odo in the direction of Rom to divert suspicion from himself. Rom is incarcerated but refuses to divulge anything about what he was doing and why. He explains that he will only speak to O'Brien alone. While they are talking, he asks Miles why they're trying to kill the wormhole aliens, and Miles is finally able to understand what is going on and why. Odo is still suspicious, however, and confronts Miles while he's performing the last modifications. Miles knocks him unconscious, finishes the modifications, and calls Keiko to tell her it is done, and to meet him at the runabout. However, on the runabout, Miles tricks the Par Wraith and unleashes the radiation on it, expelling it from Keiko's body and killing it. As a reward for figuring out what Keiko was up to, Chief O'Brien promotes Rom to the day shift. So now, talking about this episode, I'll give you what I liked in general, and then, Bill, you can attack my thoughts.
Like a parasite.
Well, first and foremost, I thought Rom was brilliant in this episode. He was funny. He was smart. He was loyal. He showed so much character depth that we really hadn't seen in close up before. We've kind of gotten hints of it, but I think we finally saw like what his character can be, and he always plays him kind of dopey, like the voice that he gives him and everything, so you don't expect him to have quite the depth that we see in this episode, and I thought that was great. I also thought he was able to give us a lot of the exposition we needed in the episode about Par Wraiths and not have it feel overly exposition-y. So I thought he was really great. I thought this, the whole thing with O'Brien and Keiko was just really kind of chilling. The way it starts off, you know, she starts saying, you know, like who she is, and he just thinks she's role playing and wanting to, you know, to get a little naughty with him. And I thought that was kind of fun until he finally realizes, no, she's not messing around. And then, you know, it was finally one where when the protagonist of the show says, oh, I can't tell everybody else this, I have to deal with this myself, it makes sense. There's so many of these shows where something's happening and they're like, oh, I can't tell the powers that be because blah, blah, blah. And you're like, that's a bunch of bullshit. In this case, you know, he actually went to tell Sisko, and when he did, the Keiko Par Wraith threw herself off the balcony, nearly killing the body that she was inhabiting. Like I said, I kind of found all that kind of chilling. I thought the suspense of it was really good. And ultimately, the resolution, albeit a little quick to occur, I still felt was satisfying. I didn't feel like it was a real cheat. Well, the only aspect of it that I kind of felt was a little bit of a cheat was this Par Wraith was onto everything O'Brien did. Why would it totally trust him the way it did at the very, very end? That's the only kind of little chink in the armor for me. But otherwise, I was riveted to this. I was watching it. Not a lot of action, but a lot of suspense, and that was good enough for me. Bill, go ahead. Attack it. Kill.
Well,
wasn't a bad episode, but maybe it's just because maybe it's just too soon to torture O'Brien again.
It's never too soon to torture O'Brien.
I've been sitting here trying to think. Imagine that.
And my head hurts.
But do they torture everybody else on the show as well? I mean, I guess we had torture Bashir one a few episodes back with, you know, the planet where he's trying to save everybody, but he can't. But it just seems, I don't know, maybe it was just too soon to have another Let's Mess with O'Brien show. Now, the good thing in it was the stuff with Rom, and, oh, wow, this is interesting, the Pah Wraiths. I wonder if they'll ever come back up again. So, I wonder if they were actually thinking of that when they did that, too. You guys have the companion. Did anybody look up to see if this was thought out? Like, was this a long-term plot, or was this just a throwaway thing that they picked up later?
I can't say I looked up that particular fact, but I think it was a long-term thought. Especially, we're already in season 5 of 7, so I think they know where they're going at this point.
It was nice to see Rom's character.
Before you go into that, Bill, when you asked that, Andy was going to pontificate as well, and I interrupted him. So
I was just looking that up, and it's basically no. They came up with the idea that would become the Pah Wraiths back in the first season. It says here, but they didn't. It didn't fit into the scheme of the show at that point. And then when they brought it back, they found that they liked the idea of the being wormhole aliens that were evil, kind of like a yin and yang mirror universe thing. So they kept bringing them back, and they will recur all the way through to the season finale, won't they? At the end of season 7.
Yeah. Yeah, because I read up on them just to see where they were going to come back again. But it didn't expound on. not that there was any bad acting. I don't know. Maybe I just wasn't in a mood. To see O'Brien tortured again. Hey, how does the Pah Wraith know everything he's doing? I mean, what, is she just watching him the whole time, everywhere he goes? She can't be watching him everywhere he goes. I mean, you can't tell me what he had to knock Odo out. He couldn't just tell Odo, look, you're going to have to trust me on this. I know this doesn't make sense. Because she wasn't there at that point.
He had like a minute.
I don't know. Yeah.
What if Odo said, no, I don't trust you?
Then knock him out.
Well, yeah, I like what he did. I like that he went to the one person that Pah-Wraith Kekol wouldn't think of him turning to. So it's entirely possible she's monitoring all of the bridge crew and the people that he normally has relationships with, but she probably didn't give a second thought to Rom.
Right.
So the fact that he uses Rom actually made a lot of sense within the story, I thought. And then at the end of it, he rewards Rom for what he's done for him. I thought that was really clever.
I like that Rom figured it out and he didn't.
Yeah, and like Paul said, these kind of stories normally have to jump through hoops to say, well, why doesn't he just leave a note, wife being possessed by alien, and just slide it into Dr. Bashir's hand or something when they're playing racquetball or whatever it is they play. And I thought they came up with a good reason for him not doing that. I actually thought this one was quite clever in its writing. I enjoyed it. It's a solid middle of the road episode for me. It's not, and I don't mean that in a bad way, I don't mean it's middle of the road dull. I mean this is a solid middle of the road entertaining episode, as you expect from this season, where essentially they're firing on all cylinders and everything's working at this point. And from this point on, the show just really is very, very good. And there was anything wrong with it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was one of the better torture O'Brien episodes, because it wasn't, let's take him away and do ridiculous things to him that really would have a psychologically damaging effect on him. Here, it's just his wife's been taken over by an alien. Well, that's happened to O'Brien before. He was taken over by an alien in... it was an episode of The Next Generation, wasn't it?
Yeah,
him, Troy, and who was the other one? Was it Data?
Yes, they were all
him,
on
Troy,
the,
and Data.
They were 10 forward. Was that when Keiko was pregnant?
when Worf had I think
she was pregnant, but Worf delivered her in disaster.
Oh, that was where they hit the
graviton mine or something. Yeah.
Yeah, like the spatial quantum string, and it like snagged the ship.
So I like that this was a Torture O'Brien episode, but not in the literal sense.
Ah, maybe I just couldn't get into it because I was constantly pausing and going, "All right, how much is left?"
Clearly, you weren't into it then. But I also like just conceptually, I like the Pod Wraiths, that they are the, like you said, the yin and yang, or if you want to go to, you know, Christian religion, then you know it's Satan and his followers.
Yeah, they're the fallen aliens that get kicked out of the celestial temple, heaven. I'm not saying it was a bad episode, and maybe it was just my mood. You know, I mean, sometimes depending on your mood, you may see things differently.
Ah, come on, Bill, stick to your guns. Say why it sucked. You're giving in too quickly.
No, I just wasn't ready for another Torture O'Brien episode, and I don't know.
I find myself sitting on the edge of the seat waiting for another Torture O'Brien episode all the time.
They're Paul's favorite episodes.
Well, every season, you know, you're going to get a mirror episode, you know, you're going to get a Ferengi episode, a Klingon episode, and a Torture O'Brien episode.
Well, plus I'm trying to change my diet and trying to cut back on a lot of things.
You're blaming your lack of sugar on your dislike of this episode.
No, he's bacon and eggs and corned beef hash. It was making me hungry.
Oh, I love that aspect of it, too. He comes down, what is it, bacon, eggs, corned beef hash, you know, whatever. So, what are you eating? That's Miles O'Brien breakfast. So he's trying so hard to fit in with these people that he's, you know, he's eating stuff that you know, according to his culture, is repugnant. But, you know, he's embracing it. He's taking it on. This is what they eat in the day shift. I just love that.
Yeah, all that stuff with Rom being promoted to the day shift was just delightful.
I'll have a Rectagino. I thought he was great, and he was brilliant as far as I was concerned.
Did no one else think that it was very funny as comic book fans that this was Rom versus the Power Rates?
You know what? I thought of Rom, but I didn't think of the Dire Wraiths. That didn't occur to me. So, good call, Andy.
Totally missed that.
When you guys, you know, when we were doing messages back and forth, and you said something about Rom, and it was before I had watched the episode, I thought you were actually talking about the comic book Rom. And I was like, what the heck? And then, oh yeah, Rom.
I did like the Quark's scene brother. Of his party, where he shatters the glass, like he's.
Oh yeah.
Because he's so, you know, the Wraith is doting on Molly, and he's kind of like, and he shatters that glass, and everybody's kind of like, dude, what's up?
Yeah. Well, that goes to one of the things that I just enjoyed about this episode, is that suspense level. Mm-hmm. You know, and from our perspective, you know, Keiko's kind of there, and we have an idea of what her personality is, but we haven't seen her enough with anybody except for Miles.
Stretch her chops, because usually she's, yeah, like you said, she's there. So, I mean, at least she got to, you know, take on a different role and act.
Yeah, and we got to see her interact with the other crew members.
She's just subservient to being Chief O'Brien's wife. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially all she is. So having her have a different role, I suppose it's quite pleasant for the actress.
Although technically it wasn't Keiko that was doing this, it was the Power Wraith. But we're still seeing her interact with these people, and you're getting a feel for, you know, the Power Wraith is trying to emulate what Keiko would do and say, to the point where she made all this food, which is kind of interesting. You know, I'm gonna destroy the aliens, but first I have to make this food.
I like the slightly scared of her as well. O'Brien and Bashir's reaction at the beginning when O'Brien tails Bashir off for poisoning all of her plants. Those things that Mr. Miyagi has.
The bonsai trees.
Yeah, the bonsai trees. And Bashir's like, no, I'm not having anything to do with it. And he runs off. I have somebody on the operating table.
Who do you have on the operating table? I'll get someone.
Yeah, and I love the idea that he's left left some on the operating table. That's quite funny. They've done a really good job with O'Brien and Bashir's relationship, and I think this was, even though it's not a part of the episode, that little teaser bit was really funny.
Well, I think they've done a really good job of progressing Bashir totally to the point where now he's a likable character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it started off, he was not only, you know, portrayed as arrogant, but he was arrogant and just kind of annoying. And that now he's, you know, he's just, you know, a regular part of the ensemble. He's got some depth to him. He's not just, you know, giving these lines trying to pick up women and whatever. Although they, you know, and it will get resolved at some point, but he does need a love interest on the show. He you know, right now, as far as his personal life is, he's just, you know, he's LeFou to Miles O'Brien's Gaston. So, yeah, I just, you know, I thought, listen, I can't remember her name, Rosalind Chow. I thought she did a really nice job with the role. You know, she hasn't been given a lot to do on the show. She's there, you know, she's more like a prop more often than not. But in this one, where she had to be the villain, and she's doing it with like this kind of smile on her face, where you could see she's enjoying torturing O'Brien, as we all would. And you know, just I found her to be scary, which was great. And so, just take me 1 second to, you know, cause an aneurysm and kill her.
Wouldn't all those computer things? He's you know. Computer, how long would it take to, you know, subdue the How long would it take to joke? Wouldn't that, like, raise a red flag somewhere? Hey, this guy's looking up all these ways he can knock his wife out. Somebody want to look into this? Like, you know, does it, like, flag something in Odo's office? I think we got somebody who's trying to commit murder or, you know, rape or something here going on. Oh, wait. No, that's only the society we live in now. Oh.
Maybe he's just researching a story for,
yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Computer, if I wanted to kill my wife, if I wanted to kill my wife, would anyone know?
I'll hire Danny DeVito and we'll do a crisscross.
Computer, tell me ways to dispose of her body.
Well, you could, you know, dump her in a phaser coil. Put her body in lie.
Yeah, you would think there would be certain buzzwords that if you use them, you know, it goes into some sort of a red alert on it where it's like, you know,
computer,
somebody in security may want to check this out.
Computer, begin playback of Catcher on the Rye. You know. Right? That's the book that they say that always tags serial killers, isn't it?
Is it?
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Or maybe I'm thinking.
I'm never reading that one, though. Then they'll know all the things I'm up to. Anyway. I really enjoyed it, as I said.
Oh, great. I just Googled it. I just put myself on a list.
You idiot.
Dumb.
I just finished saying that I wouldn't do that.
Never stops me!
Dumbass.
So what does it say? The reception. Star Trek episodes are often recognized as morality plays, and the episode may be about spousal abuse, where the person is nice to outsiders, keeping up appearances, but plays cruel tricks on the family in private. AVTV Club described the episode as a hostage situation in its 2013 review of the episode. They noted as a fantastic bad O'Brien Day type episode and praised Rosalind Chow's acting performance as fake Keiko.
Fako?
Fako.
Yeah, let go of my Fako.
I tend to agree with that. The whole spousal abuse thing is interesting, and I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective, where, you know, she's putting up the false front of being this sweet, loving wife. Meanwhile, she's, you know, every time they get a moment in private, she's like, you know, just not only having him do her bidding, but you could see she's kind of like relishing torturing him.
She's evil.
One part in particular that I found like that little sense of humor in torturing him was when she's in the hospital bed after she threw herself off the ledge, and she's like, "Kiss me, Miles," with Bashir watching. That was, you know, like, it isn't just let me see if I can get away with what I want to do. It's let me do that and have fun torturing him, because over the last 5 seasons, I've seen so many other people enjoy torturing him. It's my turn.
I guess she knows how to take a fall. Miles!
I'm looking at memorable quotes on Memory Alpha. Is there something wrong, Chief? I can work slower if you want me to. Well, Rom, I'm glad things are going so well for you. No, you're not, but thanks anyway, brother.
See, I think this is what makes this one. It's all these little scenes between the other characters. It's the Rom and Quark scene at the beginning. It's the Bashir O'Brien scene in the pre-credits bit. It's all the little moments that we've got to the point now where they've established all these different relationships between these different characters that makes this one really work, to the point that you don't notice that Dax and Kira... Well, Kira isn't in it at all. Dax is in very little. Worf has, what, one line where he asks how Keiko, how the baby's doing, which makes sense because he delivered the last baby.
Yeah, I'm sure he wants to be not around when the next one comes.
Well, I think he has already asked, hasn't he? When is it due? I'll be off on the Defiant. So all of that elevates this one as well. If this had been a first season show, it wouldn't have had any of that and probably wouldn't have been very good. But because it's a fifth season show, they're able to put all these little character bits in.
And we talked, you know, in season one, we talked a lot about how they tried to promote Miles O'Brien in some of their script writing as, you know, he was the character we knew already coming into this. So let's focus on him a little bit. And we felt like they overdid that. They overestimated the audience's love of Miles at that point. And when you think about it, I think our criticism was warranted because, you know, when he was on DS9, you know, he was a character, but he was a very minor character. I mean, when he was on TNG, rather, excuse me. But now we've gotten to know Miles in the way he's been developed on this series. And now an episode like this plays so much better than it would have if they had done it in the first season. Not only because of the mythology of the wormhole and the aliens and all of that, but also just because O'Brien as a character is much more acceptable to us, I think. So, you know, and again, just, you know, he was in a ridiculous situation. You know, there was really no way to get out of it, and even the solution they had, which I found acceptable, the only problem I had with it, like I said, was that little nitpick that this Power Wraith was so aware of everything he did. How did it overlook the fact that he could do what he finally did do? Unless the Power Wraith was of a mind that Miles did not know what the purpose was of. Nah, that makes no sense. I was going to say, you know, because it took until Rom told him what they were doing for him to even realize it. But clearly when he set her up with the shuttlecraft and everything, you know, he made it clear he knew what she was doing. So, I don't know if I'm the Power Wraith. I don't know if I'm going to say, yeah, let me get into the shuttlecraft. That's in direct line with the ship's ability to shoot at the wormhole.
Well, but the Power Wraith needed to get in there after they were dead, so that's why... And
yeah, but no. My question isn't why the Power Wraith needed to be there. My question is, why did it trust Miles to not have blackmailed, double-crossed him?
Maybe they wouldn't let Keiko take a runabout on her own, and she needed him to have the clearance to just take it.
Yeah, maybe should have double-checked his work a little or something. I don't know.
At that point, why didn't she just jump out of Keiko and go into O'Brien? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's some little
things.
Then
you could say, you gotta stop. No, wait. No, I guess you could have not killed. I don't know. Why do I care? Oh, sorry.
Why do I care?
Paul, you mispronounced radiation.
Radiation.
Thank you.
Sorry. I hate when I do that wrong. And does anybody have anything further on this episode?
No.
Or are we reading away? Okay, so with my previous statement that I always view 3 as average, that's my own personal take on things, I thought this was significantly better than average. I did not think it was among the all-time greats. I don't think it's a 5 episode or a 4.5 episode, but I thought it was very solid, and I'm going to give it a 4.0. And I get silence. Nobody else wants to rate it.
No, I was waiting for Bill, because Bill went second after what we thought of it. But, so.
Well, I was initially going to give it a 2, but I will raise my...
You've convinced me to look for Rocky in the City.
I will raise my rating to a 3. 3 shattered glasses at a party. Because I did like the ROM stuff. I did like the building. You know, where it's going to go from here with the Paw Wraiths. They were good performances. And maybe, you know, sometimes you're always, you know, not in a mood or something. Maybe it's just, you know, maybe something with me. But, I mean, it wasn't a bad episode. It was, for me, it wasn't a really great episode. It wasn't as bad as some others, so I mean, I'll say 3. I'll say 3.25 broken glasses. And Paul's going, God damn, I gotta change this again.
Well, they say it was a great episode. Well, they say it was a not so good episode.
It was great, man. Game over, man. I'm really mixing my movies now.
We're really going all over the map here.
Aliens. 3.25.
Okay. You can say that there's some interesting themes here about spousal abuse if you want to go that deeply into it. But for the most part, this is just a standard alien possession story. Well executed, well written, well acted. For me, this was a solid middle-of-the-road one, but not in a bad way. Not a bit middle-of-the-road. This was a good middle-of-the-road, but I don't think it's worthy of more than 3.
Right, well, I think the spousal abuse thing... just to touch on that for a moment, I didn't see that the way that they mention it, you know, like the way she's presenting herself as being so nice as compared to, you know, what she's doing with him. And I kind of liked that once they pointed it out and I started to look at that. But, I mean, I definitely saw some element of the spousal abuse stuff beforehand. So I don't think that's fishing for something that's not there. I do think that is there. But, yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being the one who loves the show while you two bring me down.
No, I'm agreeing with you mostly. I just don't think it's worthy of that high rating.
Somebody gives an iTunes review, remember, Paul loves the show.
I mean, if you do want to explore those deeper themes of it, I liked that it was spousal abuse from a female perspective. It was the female that was being the abuser. That was very forward thinking of the show. But I still don't think it was... It's not one I'd leave on as Deep Space Nine at its best.
Andy, it's not bad. Are you trying to tell us something?
I'm trying to tell you that I didn't think this one was bad.
I mean, is...
He's, when Angela comes in the room, Andy's going to be like, help me.
No, that's when I turned into a fly.
Help me.
So... We've given our reviews, but what does Blaine think? Bill?
What does Blaine think? What's he say? Party time. Blaine's on now.
Anybody listening who has musical ability and can actually kind of make that music for us, because I've tried to find like a karaoke version of that so I can get Bill's voiceover on it,
I don't but think I can't. He sings it with the right notes.
No, but I think if we can get the music, if we can get the music, then we can get it right.
And I think I change it every time I sing it, so...
Yes, you do. And I kind of like that, but I think we do need the music for it. So if anybody has any musical ability and can do that for us, we'd appreciate it. But anyway, Blaine says, "Hi, guys. Finally, a storyline with the O'Brien family that doesn't include bickering." And I'm going to interrupt that there. It doesn't include bickering because it's not really the O'Brien family. It's Miles and a Par Wraith. There's still conflict between the characters, but it's not about who is doing the dishes or some such thing. I like the realism of those exchanges, but when those are Keiko's only scenes, it makes her seem more naggy and negative than she actually is. I love what happens with Rom and O'Brien here. We see that Rom is a really good engineer, even recognizing what all the modifications will do. His conversations with Quark are great, and he had what is probably the best line of dialogue in the whole episode. "I'm Quark's brother. I know the role. Next time, well, I'll leave that for Andy to announce, but I'm excited." So, I don't know what he's talking about for next time. It doesn't really, it doesn't ring a bell.
Could be anything.
Maybe it's going to be Tribble.
It sounds to me like Blaine was kind of, you know, in agreement as to what we thought were the positives in the episode, in particular Rom. So, yeah. We're with you, Blaine. Do we have any other email?
Yes, we do. We have, Faith, we haven't got to In Purgatory Shadow yet. David's, I'm sure we read David's last time, didn't we? The military one?
I believe we did.
Yeah, I think we did. And I usually try to move the ones we've read out of the main folder.
But we haven't read Michael Nielsen's or John.
So let's read Michael's.
Okie dokie. You want me to do it?
It's not in my contract.
Okie doke. Email section, we need an email jingle as well, Bill. I'll let you think about that. Okay. Michael Nielsen has emailed in talking about Rules of Engagement. "Hi, Michael. Just finished listening to your recap of Rules of Engagement and wanted to mention what is probably the one thing that makes me scratch my head every time I watch the episode, which is why would a civilian transport have a cloaking device? There is no logical reason in my mind why a civilian vessel would be equipped with a piece of military technology. It would be like United Airlines using a B-2 to fly passengers from LA to New York, yet no one in the episode questions it. They just figure, well, it's a Klingon ship, and since the Klingons have cloaking technology, then all those ships, regardless of purpose, must have cloaking devices. Instead, it takes the discovery that the ship, crew, and passengers were all in a crash months ago. And on that, doesn't the Federation version of the CIA or the NSA monitor the Klingon version of CNN and pick up on that earlier? Great show, by the way. I started listening about the same time Mission Log started on DS9, so I decided to go through your early episode in conjunction with them and getting both perspectives." Well, thank you, Michael. Mission Log go a lot deeper than we do.
Yeah, well, they do, and they do give a different perspective on shows though than we do. So I do feel like we can exist in the same universe as them and be listened to by people who listen to them.
I seek peaceful coexistence.
Paul should get this joke.
We offer the world order. I'm sorry.
So maybe they.
You are failing.
Maybe they got that from like Crazy Eddie's cheap cloaking devices.
Yeah, that's presumably. To answer Michael's question, there is a black market for cloaking technology, isn't there? I presume. Like maybe, you know, crashed starships, that like on Jakku, there'll be people, scavengers, who go and nick what works and then sell that on the black market, because we know from Star Trek Discovery there is definitely a black market for stuff. So it makes sense that maybe they just assume that the Klingons have cloaking technology, because a civilian ship that's up to no good would probably think that having cloaking technology was a good idea.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, it's my no prize.
But thanks for writing in, Michael. I'm glad you started listening. You know, don't feel the need to wait for the mission log people. They're going to take a long time before they catch up to us. course, okay. if you do that, you may not have heard this until way after we're done with the series. But whatever.
Okay, Andy, I think I have a jingle.
Go on, then.
A little late, but whatever.
Email, it's email time. It's time to read the email this time. Who could we be getting an email from? I'm running out of phrases and things to rhyme. So well, let's just get to the email. Let's get to email time.
I think Gene Roddenberry actually wrote that same theme just so that he could make money off of it.
Email, there's letters and notes.
If you want to
email and episode quotes. Email about shows Paul didn't like. Email about shows that were quite shite. Email about some good tracks.
We're using the wrong
theme. Email, but there is no sex. We'll read from our email bag every week on this show.
So he took what you did and he perfected it in like 30 seconds.
Story of my life.
30 seconds is generous, eh, Bill?
I'm like riding a bull. 7 seconds. Oh, wait. Good.
Anyway.
So Michael made a reference to next time. I don't know. Well, actually, no. Blaine made reference to next time. And I'm not sure what he was talking about. Andy, what are we doing next time?
Next time, our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. It's a very, very, very special show as Deep Space Nine celebrates 30 years of Star Trek. Trials and tribulations. There'll be no tribble at all.
Prepare for an unforgettable hour of television.
Robinson.
Oh, Kirk. An historic encounter between two legendary crews.
He's so much more handsome in person.
Together in one of Star Trek's most beloved adventures.
They are detestable creatures.
This. Celebrate an extraordinary event you'll have to see to believe.
Too much, Father.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I wonder
What did you say, Bill? Go ahead.
I wonder what I would look like if I was a tribble.
Much like you do now.
Yeah.
Slightly less hairy. What if a Klingon came by? Alright, I think it's time to say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Now you sound like a pog.
no, that's... See, there's a difference.
Oh, completely different, yeah.
Yeah.
The dove from above. The dove from above.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
I just needed to cuddle and you fed me.
All I needed was a hug.